You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 253, The Persecuted Church in Nepal. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. Hey, Mike, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. We're finally here, 2019. It's going to be a good year.
Yeah, it is. I guess, first and foremost, how's your dad?
Yeah, as of this recording, my dad is still alive. He spent the last 2 days mostly unconscious or not awake. I don't know what the proper term is there. But it was really good. It was a wise decision. Again, prompted by my mom for me to move my trip up. So when I was there, I got to talk to him and, say all the things that needed to be said. And he is certainly ready to meet the Lord. So I don't have any concerns there. But going ahead, if people could pray for my mom, because it's going to be a big transition for her. But we expect my dad to pass any day.
Well, we have been praying and we will continue to do so.
Yeah, thank you to everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also prompted, we got a week off for the first time in 4 years last week. And in that week, Mike, it was Christmas, my birthday, and New Year's. So I got to celebrate all three of those sandwiched in there. So it's a busy week for me.
Did you get double presents?
No.
Yeah, I grew up with somebody that had a birthday on December 28th, and he used to complain about the same thing. So yeah,
absolutely. And I'm still complaining. So, but I just, what are you going to do? That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, also our fantasy season wrapped up and you finished sixth and I finished seventh.
I know. But I made the playoffs and you didn't. So our records were a couple of games. I was a couple of games better, but yeah, the Pugs just, man, they petered out at the end. It was disappointing. So Maury has told me that I'll still be the head coach next year. He's not going to fire me.
Oh, that's nice.
I survived. He's been merciful.
Well, I guess we have to congratulate Tim.
Yes, we do. Winning. Tim Andrews, who has been on the podcast before. Tim has been the doormat of this league for, three, 4 years, but he won this year.
He did.
He won this year, so kudos to him.
Congratulations. Yes, sir.
Miracles do happen.
I think I sent him an email congratulating him or something, or Facebook or something, and he said thanks. I figured he didn't rub it in or anything.
Yeah, he wouldn't. He'll be good about that.
Yeah, that's no fun. But, well, yeah. Mike, also our poll concluded, and it was a neck and neck tie all the way through. It'd go back and forth in times and Exodus, in times and Exodus. And then finally, on the day that the poll ended, it was basically still tied. So I had to extend it another 24 hours and Exodus squeaked out by 1 percentage point. So congratulations to the book of Exodus, as that'll be the next book that we cover pretty much the rest of 2019.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's remarkable. That is really remarkable.
Yeah, you mentioned you had mentally prepared for end times, didn't you?
Oh yeah, I've been there a few weeks now. I'm just expecting that to be the winner. But wow, yeah, I'm surprised.
Well, Mike, this week we're going to be talking to a special person, Theo.
Yeah, in Nepal, we go from some pretty light fare to something a little more serious.
All right. Well, looking forward to it.
Well, we're blessed to have Theo with us, who is in Nepal. And Theo has a connection to the podcast that we're going to talk about a little bit. But I think to start off here, because we're going to get into a lot of subjects, really focusing on persecution context, where he is at in Nepal, and then some of his ministry. But I think the best way to begin with this is, Theo, can you just introduce yourself to the podcast audience?
Yeah, I've been teaching the Bible around the world in different places, and ended up in India about 10 years ago. Spent 8 years there. I felt called by God to go full time, and worked with an indigenous ministry, and we began taking Indian nationals into Nepal over the course of that 8 years, and was doing teaching just in the basic level, and then felt led to call in 2016 to go full-time into Nepal. So I've married actually someone from Nepal in my travels, and we have a family, and I live here, and I teach at the different institutions. God called me to specifically to the academic community here. So, well, yes.
Now, when you say teaching, this is Bible teaching, or is it Bible teaching plus other stuff like English? Like, are you teaching English to foreign nationals?
No, I've been able to, I did a lot of that kind of stuff in India, teaching different things, but I've been able to focus primarily on the Bible teaching, and even at the academic level, in the fledgling academic community, as we'll get into later on.
Okay. Now, where are you from in terms of the United States? Or
the Midwest.
I don't know if you're a Canadian or what, but where are you from originally?
U.S., the Midwest, Southern Illinois area, so yeah.
Okay. Who is the academic community or the fledgling academic community that you're talking about?
Well, for many years, the Nepali nationals, Nepalese, had to go outside. Their community, believing community, is only about 65 years old, actually. So they've been going outside to get any kind of training. Mm-hmm. And so they've been able to implement new programs recently. They have bachelor level, and they've just now got last July – full-blown MDiv program in place, and now they're moving toward adding MTH, and eventually they want to go PhD. So
you're actually in a context that sounds very organized. Does this have government approval, or I mean, how does this work?
Actually not. The government is not too much approval of it. I went to visit one college and followed the directions on Google Maps, and couldn't find the place, and left and came back to the exact same spot because, the institutions here theologically have no standing with the government whatsoever. They do have, some of them have accreditation with outside Asian theological associations. Mm-hmm. So a person who would get a degree in Nepal could, that degree could be of use outside of Nepal in the Asian academic community, but inside Nepal it's basically worthless as far as the government's concerned. They're probably operating illegally, for sure. About the only thing that I understand now that is possibly legal is the local church, and mm-hmm. it kind of goes into what you and Johnny Cineros always talks about. Instead of, you know, bringing people so far at such great expense into an academic community, trying to do it locally within the body of Christ. And that's what I'm trying to exemplify here as I find my way through what the government might entail as far as those things.
So how did you, I mean, listeners are naturally going to know how did you and Mike, you know, get together? Like what was the connection to me and to the podcast? Can you describe that a little bit?
Well, in one word, I'd say providence, of course. Mm-hmm. You really nailed
it. We like that word here.
Yes, I do too. Your podcast, your teachings really resonate with me. When I was called, you know, I just to India, I just packed my bags and I came and visited. I came back to America and 6 months sold everything and moved to India and started working, you know, volunteer with an organization. And then when I, you know, got home in Nepal, I just came again with my family with just two suitcases, and it came. And then God showed me what he wanted me to do is this teaching and training up pastors. And so when I went back to the States and began to tell some people what I do, I ran into someone who had gotten familiar with your stuff and your materials, and they mentioned your name, and I didn't, you know, didn't resonate so much with me, but they mentioned Logos Bible Software. Mm-hmm. And so I'd known about that, but I'd always thought it was kind of, you know, out there, expensive and things. And so, when I returned to Nepal, I found out that I needed to complete my master's, and then they wanted me to pursue my PhD, and I was able to find an online university to allow me to do that in the States. So my school, when I contacted the school, they asked me how I was going to do my research, and I told them I wasn't sure, and they suggested Lagos. And then that conversation came back to my mind that I had with that individual about your materials. And so I began to research, and boy, did your material just really resonate with me. And the missionaries talk about the 1040 window in missions. Mm-hmm. I'm a biblical theologian. That's what I told the people that I would want it to do and stay in biblical theology. But those that are in practical theology missions talk about the 1040 window. And, you know, we talked at the Dallas conference, the Naked Bible First Annual Conference in Dallas. We talked about that John Walton and his avoidance of the supernatural in some cases. Scholarship has done that well. In the 1040 windows, supernatural is just huge. And so it's a huge part. Even in some of my prior studies before coming to Nepal, they said you're going to have to deal with that. And so your material is just able to bring together both the academic side of understanding the supernatural and its need and this so divine counsel. Yeah.
You saw the connection point there pretty much out of the gate is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I did. And it was just fascinating. It totally changed my way of thinking and reading the scriptures myself. And even going through your materials was a kind of brush up for help me to get reentry into the academic community as I've been out of it for so long. And so when they wanted me to do academics, you know, I was so grateful for the ability, you know, watching and reading your materials and understanding how you go back to scholarship and how you properly think as a biblical theologian versus the normal systematic theology or things. Part of the problem I see in my travels and missionary work around the world is the influence of Western things that you, as I mentioned earlier, you and Johnny Cenarso talk about, and many different things on the podcast talk about the problems entailed in our Western thinking. And when I talk to my students, they're so close to the Bible. I mean, there's a temple everywhere. There's idols. It's just right out of the pages of the New Testament. I explain to them, you know, that you guys are just so much closer to the Bible than we in the West are, and your thinking is so much closer to the Bible. And so following some of your materials, like the Think Like an Ancient Israelite, has really opened up the thinking of my students. And those people may not be familiar with Nepal. Nepal is got Tibet, China to the north, and surrounded by India on its three other borders to the south mainly. And mm-hmm. So it's nestled in there. It's where the highest mountains in the world are made famous, the Himalayan mountains.
Right.
And the main Hindu religion is here in India and Nepal with over 80%. And they have 330 million gods. I don't know if any other religious entity on the planet has a pantheon that large, but 330 million gods. And so I'm reminded again of Bill Arnold at the Dallas conference. Mm-hmm. You know, his view of comparative studies and how you go through, and I'm able to teach my students that this is a proper way, I think, of evangelization is through dialogue of comparative studies between the Judeo-Christian worldview and the Hindu worldview. And then, as Bill Arnold said, when you get to those distinctions, that's where you can really make some inroads into a conversation and understanding, hey, yeah, you know, divine counsel, the gods, you know, instead of, we would say Mickey Mouse, or there's a famous cartoon over here the kids watch called Ben 10. I don't know if it's in America or not, but
never heard of it.
Yeah. But, you know, I say, you know, we don't look at the gods like Ben 10, like Mickey Mouse. It's not a cartoon. We actually understand that, you know, that there's something to them. And when you are able to do that with the Hindu religion, especially in that 1040 religion that's so focused on the supernatural, wow, it just, man, really opens up the doors.
Sure. Well, I'm going to have, I have a couple of specific questions in regard to that. But before we go down that trail, you had reached out to me, and we've had a couple of conversations that were, you know, general conversations, and this will give us a chance to be, I hope, a little more specific without putting you in any kind of jeopardy. But you mentioned that you have a problem where you're at with persecution, and that this has been going on for a while, but it seems to be accelerating. And could you talk to us a little bit about that? Like, what's the context for this? Because is Nepal an independent state, or is it controlled by a bigger entity? What's the political situation, and what's going on over there?
Well, Nepal is a Hindu kingdom originally. They were a group of kings, much like India, just a group of kings. India was united, obviously, because of the British brought them together. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to get rid of the British. Nepal has never been ruled by any foreign power. Their problem has always been internal. And so eventually, you know, king of the hill, king of the mountain, as mm-hmm. I joke, because of the Himalayan mountains here in Mount Everest. But, the you know, one king became king of all, one king to rule them all. And so their kingdom, in about 300 years ago, some Catholic missionaries made their way to the Kathmandu Valley. But eventually they were, you know, expelled because of the fear of being British spies. And right. So Christianity was really just wiped out. It was a closed kingdom, much like Bhutan still is today. And in 2006, though, they had their major civil war and the revolution, a very bloody time in Nepal, very, very difficult time. And so things have changed. But in the 1950s, pretty much the evangelical missionary outreach was started as Nepal opened up its borders around 1951, I think. And by 1954, we started to see the influence of missionaries that had been along the border, mainly in India, where people would cross over for services, jobs, or hospital needs or whatever, and missionaries were able to reach out. But they started coming in and around, you know, about 65 years ago, 1953, 1954, and started able to begin with the church. But they had the underlying promise worked out with the government back then that, you know, no evangelism, you know, that the Western foreigners would not evangelize proper. And so no proselytization would be allowed. And they just, you know, serve people. But as I talked to some of the missionaries that have been here for many, many years, you know, it's just natural. People want to know why you're there,
right.
Why give your life to the nation of Nepal. Nepal has faced so much internal strife, even in the last, since, you know, this past decade where they formed their government finally. It took them over 10 years of turmoil to finally come up with a constitution, and they're still fighting it. And it used to be a joke, you know, that people were prime minister for almost a day. But it was just crazy, as all the turmoil. And so now they've firmed up and they've got a stable government. They've elected their first majority for a 5-year term that has actually gotten somewhere. And so they're pretty stable. It's a democracy. You know, patterned off of the Indian constitution or whatever. And so Nepal has always pretty much turned to its south, big brother, the Hindu nation of India, for the most part. But in recent years, they've been turning towards China because they've been mistreated by the Indians. One of the things India promised to do for Nepal for, oh, many years, decades apparently, was to build like a police/military headquarters. And the Chinese government did it in 2 years and handed them the keys. And so China has really made some inroads into, and it's kind of a back and forth between the two. And Nepal does not want to be underneath either one, but they are very heavily influenced by both the Chinese and Indians, especially the Indians.
Yeah, so you have a situation where you've got a native population doesn't want to be under the thumb of either China or India, and they also don't want to be unduly influenced by you guys. You know, what I guess I'm wondering, how do you do what you do, or is there, are you starting to suspect that there's been more of an awareness that you're there? and that that might turn into something, you know, hostile? Or, I mean, what makes you suspect that there's something kind of looming over the hill here in terms of another wave of persecution coming back?
What the deal was is primarily is the influence of India. Narendra Modi, their prime minister that was recently elected a few years back, he's very much Hindu. So Hindu rule.
I've heard India. He's cracking down on Christians. Cracking down.
Yes, it's very hard. Many missionaries have left. I left providentially. God called me. I wasn't paying attention necessarily to the politics of it. I'm independent. I'm not sent by any huge organization. I just went. And a few friends like, hey, we might want to support you. So I just went. So I'm not with any organization. But yeah, he really has cracked down hard. I've talked to both Indians and I've talked to missionaries that have had to leave because of him. And so his influence and the Indian government influence in Nepal has led to a heightened persecution against Christianity. And then there's China. I want to talk about China. I don't know if you're familiar with what's happened in China. For about 10 years, China let everything go free as far as the church. And then it was late in 2017, I suppose, they began to crack down and they actually imploded, if that's the right word, a church. It kind of reminded me of 9/11 with it. The church went inside of it and they've been burning churches. And they said they monitored the Christians for 10 years, and they said, we know who you are now. We want you to register. If you don't come register, we're coming after you. And so it was in the Chinese news media just several months ago that China said they made a pact with both prime ministers of India and Nepal to drive out the UN and all Western influence with Asia and the rise in the 21st century kind of thing. So especially Christians. And so they made a pact. And so, as we talked about earlier, the theological institutions here that are here have no leg to stand on as far as the Nepal government. And some of them don't even wish to be seen. You know, they have no presence. You can't even see or know that there's anything there. It's kind of secret.
And that's what I was wondering. Like it's not like they're hanging a shingle out, you know, or a sign.
No, they're getting away from that. And so they really don't know if it's going to be like the Chinese where they're monitoring. It's been told that close to some 1,000 missionaries have been put on a list. Mm-hmm. They're cracking down where they can legally. And that's why I really liked your conversation about the church with Johnny, about the church and theology in the church. One pastor here, I'm just so blessed because he's raised up people within his church, and he's followed that model, and so he has raised up a pastor and sent him out from his church.
Yeah.
And he's raised several more, and so that model is where I find that the church has legal standing, but they're going after visas. I don't have that problem because I'm married to a Nepalese national. They're going after visa. The South Korean ambassador was contacted by the Nepali home minister saying that 60% of the people on student visas mm-hmm. and work visas have come for church work, and that's illegal. And they've even just recently, within the last month, they've gone into a Korean's residence where he was at, and they've checked through his things to try to find out if he had any Bibles, if he's preaching. Because it was not according to his visa. They've instituted a anti-conversion law along the lines of what the Indians did, and no one can be converted. No one is to be converting in Nepal, and so if you're caught baptizing, it can be a problem, especially for foreigners, which has always been a problem. Mm-hmm. But they've actually expelled some foreigners. They even expelled the Jehovah's Witness, and they thought the Jehovah's Witness was Christian because they were going door to door, believe it or not, over here. There's a lot of cults I have to deal with out of South Korea. South Korea is very strong presence here. The South Korean churches got lots of missionaries here, and they've been very strong. But there's also cults that have come out of South Korea teaching really weird doctrines. We had the Daughter of Jesus come. And she spoke to the
well. That was nice.
To an Asian, yeah. she spoke to an Asian summit, you know, and she gave the government $100,000 American dollars. Her husband had a dream, and, you know, she's the daughter of Jesus, you know. And so the cults, you know, they get so much leeway for some reason, of course. But the original, you know, the diehard Christians like me, that they're just going after, they're trying to go. So they're going legally right now. They got a little bit of problem with the UN and things, and some of the Christians, the indigenous Christians, have taken their case before the world. And so they've made another law called the Preservation Law, saying that they're trying to preserve the Nepali culture. And
yeah,
afraid
of course.
Of all the idols and temples, you know, that were destroyed. And the earthquake was really phenomenal. Most people may not be aware, but in 2015, there was two earthquakes. Major earthquake happened in April. I felt it when I was in India. It was so powerful. And then it was followed up in that June of 2015 with a second earthquake. And for many months, over a year, it wasn't until I think January 2016 was the last time I felt the tremors. But daily there were tremors, you know, from, you know, April of 2015 all the way on into 2016. It was just crazy. Now it's calmed down. You haven't felt the tremor in a while. But the earthquakes brought in so much destruction. And then the governments of the world obviously turned in Nepal and gave aid. But you know how that works when foreign governments give to a corrupt government, you know, lots of money and what happens. And so it was the church that showed up from all around the world that came in. And so we had this explosion. And so some media outlets have reported it's the fastest growing church statistically in the world in Nepal, where you went from like 0.4% Christians to today about 1.4, 1.5% by some estimates. And that's probably conservative because the Nepali census does not want to show so many Christians, but they've seen an explosion of Christianity happen because people came and they rebuilt Nepal, and Nepal is totally being rebuilt from the ground up, you know, after the earthquakes. And a lot of that, for the personal thing, is the Christians that came and from around the world and that support him. And so people saw this, you know, and they saw this great outreach. And so many people have come to the Lord in that time. And so it's just very, like I said, providentially that I came here. You have a fledgling academic community. You have a church that's, you know, 65 years old at best. So a church here that celebrates 25 years, I call it Jubilee, you know, is very excited, you know, because churches are not that old. And so for someone to celebrate their silver Jubilee, and some get a golden Jubilee, which is very rare here, 50-year-old church is exciting for the community, you know, because it's just brand new. And then you have all these cults that come in, you know, that they're trying to fight as well. Jehovah's Witnesses here, as I said earlier, the Mormons are here, and all these South Korean cults. That come, like the famous one is Mother God. I can't think, they have a long name, but this lady that was married to Jesus in Korea, An Jun Song.
So we've got Jesus' daughter and Jesus' wife. You know,
So
that's exciting. So,
and they're very good. They promise, you know, they promise, because most Nepalis, there's nothing here. The number one thing is tourism, and the government's trying to change that. Taking again steps from either the Indians or the Chinese or various entities that want to invest in Nepal, but for the most part, people are trying desperately to get outside of Nepal and go anywhere. And so, if someone comes to you and preaches Jesus, and you're Christian and you're not very smart, you don't know much about it. Many people, you know, upwards of 40, 50, 60 years old can't even read, you know, and they give you a visa to Korea, you know, and your son will go to Bible college. You think, well, that's great, but you don't realize your son's going to a cult, you know. And so they're very persuasive. And so it's very difficult here, you know.
So your ministry is basically you're trying to train the indigenous folks there, and you know, with the goal of producing people who can pastor churches, who can essentially be replicated, you know, in terms of what they know of Scripture. Is that correct?
Yeah, they just don't know. They don't know. It's very, again, you go out into the village areas, which is where some of the schools try to pull from the village area, bring them to the into the capital and the Kathmandu Valley, and try to train them up. Because if you can read in the village, you might be the pastor just simply because you can read the Bible, because nobody else can. And that's very dangerous because nobody can read their Bibles. And then, you know, the pastor reads and he can say whatever. Of course, there's all the different variants of Christianity, too, that have come in with abuse. I just talked to a missionary the other day that's been here for close to four decades. And so he talked about the, you know, the church again in the 1950s. It's just coming out the gate. It's pretty new. And then you have the charismatic wave hit about the 60s and 70s across the world. And so just about every form in Nepali worship is charismatic in nature. Because of that. So, you know, you have influences that are within the church and you have the cults outside of the church and you have persecution from the government, the Hindus, and not some of the Buddhists and, of course, the Muslims that are not so big in Nepal. So you have lots of persecution from within and without. It just reminds me of reading the general epistles, in the New Testament.
Let me ask you this. Now, you're dealing with, you got a problem of a lot of people can't read. You've got a problem with going out to the villages and bringing them to you or vice versa, you going out to them. So there's a bit of a logistic problem. What do you have for resources? Now, I want the audience to know that you were instrumental in finding someone to translate my little supernatural book into Nepali. We also have a Hindi translation. I don't know if you've tried to use either of those, but how are you, if you are, making use of those materials, and what other resources do you have?
Well, that's what I've been trying to do, is gather resources. The internet is the big deal, now, because everybody has a phone, and pretty much. And so you're trying to get the resources off the internet as much as possible. And so I have a PDF of just like 7 pages of links off the internet where people can get, my students can get materials to study, because that's what they want to do, We do have a few libraries, but, just a couple, 2, 3, maybe 4,000 volumes in it, and a lot of them are older, I'm desperately looking for stuff off the internet. And so it was a blessing to get your materials, because that's when I started. I told one of my schools, I said, I've got to teach this class. And I developed a class based on the unseen realm. And then when I heard about the Miklok project of supernatural, that was just perfect, because that's exactly what is needed in a 1040 window, the supernatural. And so, and from an academic perspective, because again, you have the cults and you have the persecution from within and without the church. And so, and so you have all this stuff. And so,
can a lot of them read English, or are they dependent on tools in their own language?
A lot of it's dependent on their own language. Supernatural is a huge blessing because, again, we have so many Koreans here, so you have the Korean version. The Hindi language and the Pali language use the same alphabet, and many people are familiar with both. And so even the translator himself was so thrilled because I shared with him the Hindi version. And he said, wow, that was so helpful. Of course, I gave him through Amazon Kindle. I purchased him The Unseen Realm so he could have that too, to help. But he was just so very much blessed, to have the Hindi version. And so, yeah, I give them those versions. And so my students are able to. It was finally complete. And so this last term, I was able to teach your class and my students coming out of the village. I even had a couple of Indian students by chance that made it to our school. And so I teach an English medium. I'm not able to teach in Nepali yet. So I teach an English medium, but to have the Nepali there and for them to be able to read it, and even some of them to read the Hindi as well, and, to have that. And then those that are connected with Koreans can then share the Korean version as well. Because what you teach is supernatural, and some of that's avoided, but over in the 1040 window, as I keep saying, that's just paramount.
And so when they encounter things like that, it sounds to me like you don't get any pushback. like they just, it helps them piece together really, you know, the supernatural is part of their worldview anyway. So it helps them to parse that biblically. Is that, am I hearing that correctly?
Well, yeah. I'll have to say this. Number one, yes, the supernatural. And as I said, they're closer to the Bible than any Westerner would be, foreigner, in the way they live. But there is pushback. That's one of the problems I talked about earlier with the Western influences, some Western academics. So I do get pushback from the older generation. A lot of my students love it.
All right.
You know, they love it because this fits exactly what they see. Okay. So my students are just in love with this. But then when they go back and they begin to try to share what they've learned, then they hit the older generation and they hit this this thing. And that's why it's very important to have the Korean translation, too, for those that are dealing with Korean leadership that have been a part of their history of their church. You know, so. And it's good that it's academically, you know, I mean, you know, to tell them it's backed up by a bibliography of some 5,000 volumes, you know, and then to tell them, you know, I have some student, one student, he had to have the Unseen Realm. So I got it purchased and brought over here and he owns a copy of it. He got a copy of Reversing Hermann too. I mean, he just had to have it, you know, and so getting this in their hands. And then your whole teaching about, you know, Eden and the purpose of, you know, it's like the academic version of the purpose driven life, you know, really truly
first time I've heard that.
Yeah. Because you teach purpose. And so many Nepalese people, they want to leave Nepal, go to America, go to Korea. I said, but why did God have you born here? And why are you sitting in this classroom at this time? You know, and so you begin to explain to them what the Dominion Mandate, the original Great Commission, the Dominion Mandate's all about, and how we're supposed to go make the rest of the world like Eden, and how we're supposed to make the rest of Nepal like. And I explained the history of America, how, you know, it's not perfect, but Americans, you know, were the ones that made the hospitals, and Americans were the ones that made Harvard, Princeton, Yale, you know, through Christians. The church was at the outlier, was at the leading edge of technology that you mentioned in podcast with Joseph on art and the Denver podcast. Wow. With All About God, how Christians were at the forefront of everything. And we were community, and the best minds were the Christians, and bringing and producing the best materials. And they were on the cutting edge of TV and things because they wanted the gospel to go out. And so I try to use your materials along with other scholarship to show how through comparative studies, through this idea of purpose, Paul's life. That's where I focus my education.
We're going to have, I mean, the little book I just came out with, What Does God Want? I mean, we're going to be looking for, you know, some translations of that. We've got two of those going, but I mean, there's another possibility there. It's real basic, but, you know, even, you know, English readers have found it useful. So, you know, you know, Lord willing, we'll be able to produce that for you as well. But how can people either get you resources, or maybe, I don't know if you have translators there that could be translating things maybe in public domain, or you know, again, what do you do for support? I mean, how do people who are in this audience, you know, listening, how can they help, you know, in, you know, teaching the people that you have, the students you have? I mean, what do you have, either some concrete ideas, or do you have a, you know, a means by which people can contribute financially? I know you said you're not under a specific, you know, denomination, but how do you get support?
Well, currently I'm working in conjunction with divinecouncil.org to produce courses for indigenous students here in Nepal, akin to your goal at MCLOT. Of bringing content to those who hunger for it but cannot get it otherwise. So this is
so perfect. How does that work? Because divinecouncil.org is not my website. Are they having things translated, or what's going on there?
Well, I just started with them, and we're working on raising funds. Number one, we're going to get subscription via Faith Life to bring Logos's entire mobile ed catalog of over 220 courses by some of the best scholars across the globe to natives here in country, where they can get certification and bring proper academic peer-reviewed scholarship. into the fledgling community of faith here in the context of this persecution, as I said, from within and without the church here. So folks can follow or support the work we do by going to a website dedicated to me, divinecounsel.org/Theo, T-H-E-O, in a short form. And I will be able to keep everyone there updated as the progress of the Project Nepal, and everyone just needs to sign up for the newsletter. And then they can email me. I'm at theo@divinecounsel.org. And so those folks have opened up a way for me to be on the internet safely. And then I'm producing classes. And so I'm going to take PDFs Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology has been translated here. David Paul Tripp's stuff is translated here. So people are in process of translating I've ran across different scholars of translating materials here. One missionary group have the Applied Commentary series was actually written in the Nepal language. And it was requested that it be translated from Nepali back into English. It was written in Nepali by Western missionaries, two doctors, not academic doctors, but medical doctors,
right,
who have been here. And it's been translated in English, so it can be translated in other languages around the world. So the goal here is for me to produce content like you're always talking about. Mm-hmm. Use classes, and then that could be translated like Mi'kmaq into any language. And so I could produce the classes in English, and then through process, we get it translated in Nepali or any other language it could be translated into.
I'll tell you what I hope for as we wrap up. I'm hoping that people stateside, okay, are listening to this. For two reasons. One is that I get asked with some regularity about, you know, how do I get this content, you know, to other people in my own church? And the short answer is you just do it. You know? So I'm hoping they hear that, here you are. I'm sure you have, you know, some colleagues over there, but you've come up with a plan to produce things with the content that you can hand to someone else or that you can use, you know, in your case, in a classroom setting. But there are things already in existence that people can use in small groups or just hand off. In 2019, we're going to have a few other ideas, you know, to try to help people take this task for themselves, you know, take it upon themselves to, you know, get the content into the hands of other people. So that's the one reason one of the reasons I'm you know, hoping, you know, people are listening to this and they can get that as a takeaway. And the other is, again, this sort of thing, you know, where you sort of just, you know, take it upon yourself, you know, to do this. This is a replicatable model. And what we're going to try to do in the podcast periodically and, you know, the newsletter and whatnot, is that now that these things exist in other languages, at least Supernatural, and again, hopefully, you know, the smaller book that leads to Supernatural, people are going to know other people like you in other language settings, in other context settings. I'm hoping that people can say, well, hey, that guy from Nepal was actually using some of these translations, and hopefully people listening can do that and recommend those translations to other people. You know, folks, I got news for you. We can't really do a whole lot of, well, we can do a lot of fancy things in marketing, but at the end of the day, it's really about this audience and word of mouth. Honestly, that's just it. There's nothing that replaces that. So again, I'm hoping that people take away essentially a model here that, you know, you come up with an idea for getting the content out either within your own little area or somebody else's area, and you just act on it. You try stuff out. You just do stuff.
Yeah. So I'm, like I said, a sandwich between the two largest unreached people groups on the planet, Chinese to the north, the Indians to the south. I'm connected with a lot of organizations here that are all over Asia. So for me to get materials that somehow can be translated, you know, it can go across all of Asia and just so fast. So,
Do the young people there, let me ask you this. How many people have phones?
Everybody. Okay. Everybody has to have a phone. And so that's what I love about your Miklot project. Bam, here's a link. They'll get it. They'll get that link and they'll get that book and they can read on it right off their phone and they don't have to worry about it. I mean, I live in a 10 by 13 apartment, you know. I don't have room for books. But if I can keep it, that's why I love Logos. If I can keep it on my phone, if I keep it on my laptop. So, you know, I've made online course folders and I have tons of PDFs, you know, and I can just gather PDFs and then eventually accept as it becomes possible, get them translated into different languages as I get the rights to do that, like I did with Supernatural. And we want to do a conference on discipleship in 2019, and it'd be perfect to have your other book ready for that. So we could tell the churches that are going to be gathered together, here's the book, textbook that's in your language that you can use and share with different people on. Get it out to the villages because, you know, you don't worry about it. It's on your phone. It's on the internet. All they need is just to get, their own online course folder. Start gathering. I tell my students, start gathering your own PDFs and start having them in your Google account or whatever, and they're there, and you can share them with pastors and people anywhere. And if you want to print them, they can be printed. But most people, it's the phone. It's on my phone.
Well, that's good to know. I mean, again, this is what we want to see happen. You know, this is again the vision, because it's the content that's the focus here. You know, so we want it disseminated. Cast to the wind and disseminated in as many languages possible. You know, and the same thing, you know, for the podcast, we hope that people will latch onto the podcast. Again, those who can, you know, understand it in English. Again, there are some barriers, but there's lots of open doors here. So I want to thank you for coming on and just sharing what's going on in Nepal, you know, your neck of the woods, your little corner of the world, and what you're doing. And hopefully, again, people will be, you know, prompted and stimulated to do just something like it or something totally, you know, different. But it's really, this is audience driven. It's people driven. It's individual Christians just doing things that need to be done. So thanks for, you know, spending part of your day with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And thank you for anyone that's sharing this, because this is incredible to take this type of information academically to give purpose to people that they can understand who I am, my identity as a son or daughter of God, and to go out and tame the chaos of this world and do what God's called me to do. It's just phenomenal, you know, to get. And then Logos is free now. I get that for my students. I've met people through your ministry at the conference, like Bill Arnold has given me some articles, David Da Silva off your podcast has given me some things. He's worked in Sri Lanka. So just getting, like you said, getting this stuff on their phones, and then they can take it out to these villages and they can share and do exactly what you and Johnny talked about, is taking this material through the church. You know, the local church is, I'm able to teach in church. I may be driven to my church and just teach out of the church and not able to teach in institutions anymore. And so having the ability to do online classes and bring this material to people is just powerful. And then get it translated. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So
thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mike, it always amazes me that we can have these conversations from around the world.
It's nice to hear people doing something with the content. You know, that's always the goal. I mean, people have heard me say it 100 times. Just, you know, my goal is to produce useful things. And, you know, it's gratifying when people take what I produce and do useful things with it. So, I'm glad to hear it. And again, hopefully, like I said, you know, as we were winding down, this is a template. You see something that needs to be done, just, you know, do it. It's okay if you improvise and change or never do something again and do something different, but just try to do something with what you're learning. And the audience is really that they're it. They are it. You know, this is word of mouth, audience driven.
All right, Mike. Well, next week we're going to get into introducing the book of Exodus and then dive nose first into it.
Yeah, we will take it. It's going to be a deep dive intro as well, but that's how we usually start these things. But yeah, we got a lot to do, 40 chapters.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's pretty much 2019 right there, right?
Yeah, there you go. We know what's on the horizon.
At least it's not 40 years, so we'll take it.
Oh, boy, that's clever, Trey. That's really, yeah. Yeah. I caught what you were throwing.
One of us has to be clever here, right?
I mean, yep. You're right. You're right. It's useful.
All right. Well, appreciate Theo again. And we want to thank everybody else for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.